The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is April 6th, Monday. This is show number 171, and because it's Monday, I'd like to apologize for not getting the show out on Friday. Bob took the week off last week. I was all set to get the show out on Thursday night, as always, but major issues at work prevented me. Yeah, basically, we've been working for 72 hours almost straight. So, sorry about that. I won't say too much more about it, but sorry about the delay. Got a good show for you guys today, so I hope you were patient, and your patience will be rewarded. We'll just go through some listener email first. First, I'd like to say huge congratulations to Matthew Thorne, otherwise known as Tornado, and his girlfriend Ina. I don't know if you guys remember, a few shows ago we talked about them. They've been traveling for about 140 days from Seattle down to the southernmost tip of Chile, basically the end of the world there. And they made it. They made it on March 30th, and Matthew sent an email out to a bunch of people. He says, after 140 days, 13 countries, and 16,895 miles, I'm proud to announce that we have finally reached Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, the end of the world. The only way we could have proceeded further south is on a boat. So they made it down there. And I've been following them on their blog at chronotonic.com/southernexposure. If you haven't been reading the blog, it's really worth checking it out, even the last few entries, just to see the... these guys really did a great job documenting their trip. They've got fantastic photos, video, and really great write-ups. Anybody planning to... take this kind of a trip, I would say this is a great guide for future adventurers that want to do this kind of a monumental ride down. These guys are so Matthew and Ina are going to go back to they're still riding to, I believe, Buenos Aires, and they're going to fly back to the States and ride some more back to Seattle. So best of luck on the rest of your trip, you guys, and maybe you guys can shoot us an email when you're back in town and the trip is really over. Good luck. I've got another email which came from Adam Silver. And he writes, as a regular listener to MotoGP OD and a reader of MotoGP Matters, because he also CC'd David Emmett. I know you both reference each other, so I figured you wouldn't mind if I sent you this message together. We don't. I also know that you are both well aware of the excellent work of the Riders for Health, and I wanted to give you an update on some recent developments, which I am hoping you might cover. So here we go. We're going to cover it. I've been working as a volunteer for Riders for Health for a few months now, and we have set up a website to help spread the word in the U.S. It's www.riderschapters.org. I'll have a link of that to that in the show notes. As you'll see, we currently have only two chapters, but we are hoping to set up more. Each chapter will promote their own regional fundraising activities and work together with the other chapters to promote national fundraisers like Day of Stars, which has a website, www.dayofstars.org. Here in North Cal, we've teamed up with Zoom Zoom Track Days, which, by the way, I've done some track days with, and they're a great organization. So back to his email. We've teamed up with Zoom Zoom Track Days, and we are running a three-month-long raffle with some awesome prizes, including a six-month VIP pass for Z2, a free ticket to Day of Stars, a free day of coaching with track god Ken Hill, and more. In L.A., the chapters run by longtime Writers for Health volunteers Howell Tumlin and Don M.D. And we are heavily into promotion of Day of Stars. This will be a truly exclusive event at Laguna Seca. You can read all about it on the website. And it is immediately followed at 4 p.m. by the auction, which is free to attend. We are hoping to get a huge crowd for the auction, so your assistance in spreading the word is appreciated. Okay, so we're spreading the word. Check it out. If you're going to be going to Laguna Seca, definitely check out Day of Stars. It looks very cool. Lots of your heroes are going to be there. And I think it should be an amazing event and for a very, very good cause. And finally, a listener you may have heard of, Toby Moody, writes in to remind us that this year, Qatar is actually on Sunday. The race is on Sunday. So April 12th is a Sunday. It's a night race, so make sure you get your times right. We earlier in a few shows ago, we mentioned that it was going to be on Saturday, because that was the way Qatar was being run. That is no longer the case, so do adjust your your schedules accordingly. Thank you, Toby. Just in the news, well, we had the big MotoGP final official test at Jerez, which ended with the we can't really call it, it is qualifying. It's QP, the session which the winner gets the BMW. But of course, we don't have qualifying tires this time around, which makes I think it makes qualifying a lot more interesting. So just wanted to go over the results really quick, because they look very different in the final standings than they, in my opinion, than they did in reality on the track. Because while Casey Stoner once again completely dominated, and we're talking like by 3/4 of a second over Valentino Rossi, he only went out for eight laps, whereas most of the other riders, there were some riders who also took short times out, like Loris Caparossi only did seven, Mika Kallio only did seven, but most of the riders did a lot more. Jorge Lorenzo especially did 16, including a run of about 12 laps, all very, very good times, all low to mid 140s. So despite the fact that Casey pulled off one magical lap and a couple of decent laps, it's still, the jury, I think, is still out on how he's going to do for race distance. We haven't really seen him ride more than a few laps at a time. Other people that are worth mentioning, Jorge Lorenzo did very nicely, but I think, most impressed by seeing both Loris Caparossi third and Chris Vermeulen in fifth. They had two. It's great to see Suzuki running this well. And just to compare, I was looking at the free practice two, specifically to see how long some of these riders stayed out on track and how consistent their lap times were. And so looking at Casey Stoner, he was out on, he had 22 full laps, but the longest stretch was just five. And during that stretch, he was about one of 140s, dropping down to barely down under into 139. Jorge Lorenzo was out for 30 laps, and he had one stretch of like 10 laps where he was pulling low 140s. Valentino Rossi had a full 25 laps. He was kind of like Casey. I guess his longest stretch was about six laps. And but his times were fairly consistent, again, mid to low 140s. Of course, the hardest working guy was Nicky Hayden. He did 33 laps, full laps, including one which was like, let's see, like 18 laps or 16 laps in a row. So once again, he's working very hard. And going back to the QP session, you know, we have Mika Kallio finished sixth, but if you actually look at his times, he had one lap in the 140s. Everything else was considerably slower, including 146, 148, 145. So that's why I wanted to mention these, because it doesn't quite, if you look at just the one lap, it doesn't quite show what was going on. Missing, of course, was Danny Pedrosa. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes from a video that it's from a Spanish TV station. It's in Spanish. But even if you don't speak Spanish, it's worth watching. It is really painful to see the shape that Danny is in. And I'm actually really concerned for the guy. He's definitely going to be... if he even makes it to Qatar, he's going to be in less, way less than 100%, and it really sounds like he's not even going to be there, which means that he's going to be starting the season at a huge disadvantage. That's a real shame. Even if you don't like Danny Pedrosa, it's painful to see a rider actually not be able to compete due to injuries. Which brings me up to the other injured rider, which is a 250cc champion, Marco Simoncelli, who broke his scaphoid in his wrist. He broke his scaphoid in a motocross accident just, I think, yesterday. And he's going to be questionable for Qatar. And this is the same injury that's plaguing Casey Stoner, obviously. He's been suffering, which a lot of people assume is why he's going out for such short runs, you know, three or four laps at a time instead of like half race distance or something like that. I actually think that there's a little bit of sandbagging going on from Stoner, and if he does turn up at Qatar and he's at 100% or close to 100%, he's going to give everybody run for their money. He's so fast. He's been so fast at testing. He has been on top every single... By the end of the weekend, he's been on top every single time. So he's back to his old antics. He's incredible. We'll see how he is under pressure. We'll see how his wrist holds out. And as far as Marco Simoncelli... starting his title defense with an injury like this, now that we know a lot more about it, I think we've all heard a lot more about this injury because of what's been going on with Casey Stoner. That's really bad news. So hopefully it's not as bad as it sounds right now, and he will be able to open up with in Qatar and defend his championship. I believe that is all I have. And now a special guest is going to join me on for the rest of the show, and I hope you enjoy it. Hey, I'm at Moto Java here with an old friend of MotoGPOD.
Hey, everybody, this is Liam. We're sitting at Moto Java on 9th and Harrison. Is this Harrison or Bryant?
Bryant.
Yeah, 9th and Bryan in San Francisco. Hey, everybody.
So, you're back in the U.S., and how are you adjusting?
I'm doing pretty well. I don't think that I expected it to be quite like this when I came back, but, you know, trying to build a family life and getting used to how much police there are on the streets necessarily. You know, compared to other countries we go to, I can't believe how large the police force is, either CHP or just local police. So finding them everywhere, it's been kind of like, oh yeah, I forgot what this was like.
Are you keeping out of trouble?
Yeah, of course. What kind of trouble could I get into?
Yeah, I can't imagine. And you have a new family member?
Oh, that's right. We picked up a dog, and he's 8 months and 7 weeks. No, 8 months and 7 days. Funny that I know that, but yeah, great little dog, and keeps us really entertained at night and really affectionate, so it's fun having a little dog around. Likes to go for drives and stick his head out the window these days, and I like taking him to the park.
He likes his monkey.
Yeah, he has a monkey toy. That it's his second favorite toy behind the duck, the ducky. Yeah, it's good. You know, I'm able to do a lot of things that I wasn't able to do out in Europe, and I'm really enjoying cooking at night and you know, planning meals and types of things that weren't even on my radar pretty much when I was over there, because it was always, you know, get ready for the next job, the next mission, and then let's just get something easy to eat tonight, you know, go out and get a pizza or get a rice bowl or something. And now I can actually spend my time and, you know, marinate something during the day and cook it and make a curry or whatever I want to cook. And so I'm having a lot of fun. It's been a lot of neat projects in the kitchen. And last month I built like a nice rolling table cutting board, which was fun because first I had to source, you know, wood and legs and wheels and then get everything measured out and cut and drilled and screwed together. And it was nice because I built it myself. And it was just, you know, ordinary piece of furniture, but it had to fit a very specific spot, and it had to fit over a certain thing on the floor, so it was tricky, but it came out okay. You know, not perfect, but not bad for a first attempt. So even doing little minor carpentry has been good. You know, building two different shelving units in my garage so I can have storage up above for all the things I got back from Europe, and... Yeah, it's been a lot of carpentry, actually. I still have a pile of wood left over, you know, old scrap wood that I need to get rid of, so I got to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, your latest post, actually, on modalium.com was about the issues with all the shipping stuff. So everything's arrived now?
Yeah, I've got everything. It's amazing, like, how thorough customs was. You know, if they ripped into my boxes, you know, and I had some books in a plastic bag to keep them dry in case the boxes got wet during shipment because it came via ocean liner, you know, they would just, rather than open the bag and look at the books, they just cut the bag open. Or I had a box of English breakfast tea that I bought in England, and, you know, the box was sealed and brand new. It was going to be a gift, but they tore the box open, and then they ripped the bags of tea open because I guess they had to make sure I wasn't smuggling in drugs.
Jesus Christ, wow.
So, really? Yeah, they're quite thorough. And, you know, I've had to go through everything, like reopen all my boxes. Customs would tape them closed afterwards and just really check things out. But so far I haven't really found anything that was damaged or anything worth noting. I just made sure that everything was there and everything looks like it is.
You're getting close to cutting your jacket or something, right?
Yeah, they sliced open a couple of the boxes and I had some leathers inside, and it came real close. I don't know how it didn't get cut, actually, because you look at the depth of the cuts that went through several layers of cardboard, and I was just like, oh, man. But, you know, fingers crossed, everything looks good so far. I haven't even actually gone through every single box. I've slowly been, like, going through it and taking bike parts out or taking some clothing out or riding gear and other household stuff that I used to use back in Spain and integrating that into our unit that we've got right now, because, you know, obviously it was set up well before I got there. And then when I came back, you know, I came with my luggage, my hand luggage. So I was, you know, for more than 2 months just living off of what I had in my suitcases. And, actually, they're giant Alpine Stars gear bags. So each one was over the weight limit, but because I was a frequent traveler with Lufthansa, I managed to get those through without having to pay an arm and a leg for the weight of the baggage. And then, you know, I was wearing just a small, you know, I was wearing the same thing basically for 2 months because I had all the same gear that I normally travel with. And, you know, it's been fun for the girl and I to go clothes shopping and just like, oh, wow, things are so cheap here in the States, even though the economy's not good anywhere in the world. You know, I specifically didn't really buy very much when I was out in Europe. when I come back to the U.S. and it's like, wow, you can get a pair of shoes for so cheap, you know, and so it's been fun just doing stuff like that.
Yeah. What was the longest stretch you were in your apartment when you were in Barcelona?
I think 3 weeks would have been like the max at a time.
This is probably the longest you've been in one place for like, what, 4 years now, right?
Yeah, just about. I still do some traveling up and down to L.A. For some business meetings, and I'll probably have to drive down to L.A. next week for yet more meetings. But yeah, it feels really good not to be looking, you know, at the calendar and thinking, oh God, I gotta be there, or you know, countdown, I gotta start my laundry now. It's really good, you know. I feel like things are kind of stepping back out of warp, and it's fun because, you know, I'm cooking meals at night, and I went to the movie theater a couple weeks ago to watch that movie with the superheroes.
Watchmen?
Yes, The Watchmen. The Watchmen, yes. Nice. Yes, save your money and use Hulu and watch something else.
What about, can we talk about how you got to Motojava today?
Well, let's just say I'm riding a beautiful two-wheeled motorcycle that is under construction. It's my current project as far as motorcycles go. I don't want to get too much into it, but we'll have a show detailing that bike in the future. It's fun, though. It's fun. And it's a V-twin. Just because I believe for street bikes, V-twins make a great platform, a good compromise of torque and horsepower. What else? It is the opposite of the bikes that I used to work on in MotoGP. When I think about it, when I think about my personal bike, I don't want traction control. I don't want, you know, ABS. I don't want electronics on my bike. I just want it to be a fun street bike with enough power so that if I give it the stick, you know, it gets up and goes and gives me a little bit of a fright or cause for concern. But at the same time, I can also whack it open most of the time. And because it feels slow to me, it feels like I've got seconds to just wait for it to spin up and just like, all right, where's the power really coming on? So, you know, it's a good street bike and I'm happy with it.
But it's got to look good too.
Yeah, I mean, all motorcycles have the ability to be special, you know, and part of it, for some people, it's what accessories they put on their bike or the paint job they put on their bike or just the fact that they have a motorcycle is enough. You know, I have my own standards as far as my personal bike, how I like it to be, and I've got to do some chassis modifications and some welding done to the frame. I've got to build some of my own parts and pieces, and that's part of the fun for me because it's a puzzle. It's a three-dimensional puzzle that I actually get a lot of enjoyment out of when I'm up in the mountains. And you know, we kept up with some leader bikes a couple of weeks ago. I've seen some video of that, so I didn't know one of the guys in front of me had a camera on the back of his bike, so that was fun for me to kind of analyze. One thing I do notice myself doing is really overanalyzing the bike quite a bit. And so I consciously have to just step back and say, well, it's all my fault because I'm the rider with the input.
Yeah. Right, right.
And
you've only done, like, the only times you've actually gotten to ride in the last few years was, like, when you were back in the States, right?
Yeah, and Ducati North America was always really gracious and always had a beautiful Ducati for me to use. And, you know, I love some of those bikes. I think last year that 848 was such a perfect street bike. Not too much power, but enough once you got it spun up. The bike was just handled like a charm and everything worked really well on it. It was stylish and very chic. And if they were a little cheaper, I'd have one. Which is not to say I couldn't have one. I mean, I do like it. It's just that I don't particularly like riding the same bike that I'm going to see coming the opposite way on the street. You know, I always prefer to have my own bike, and I want it to be easily identifiable as my bike, and it's just kind of the way my personality runs.
Well, this thing outside is definitely unique.
Yeah, it's fun. That's enough of the mystery street bike talk. we'll detail it more later, maybe.
You following the racing?
Yeah, absolutely. I try and stay off the internet now because it seems like as my old crew has spread out even more, it seems like now I've got that many more teams on my mind and situations and status updates and so on and so forth. My old data guy is working in 250 now as the data engineer for the current 125 champion. And Lele, my old crew chief, is Shinya Nakano's crew chief, working on the new Aprilia.
That is a very impressive machine.
Yeah, I'll quote him directly. He says, "The bike grew up fast." So, they're having a lot of fun working on that Aprilia, and they're definitely taking a unique approach. When I hear about my other crew chief is working as the crew chief for Tom Sykes on the Yamaha Italia team in World Superbikes.
Oh, really? Who's
Sergio.
That? Oh, cool.
Yeah, so Big Serge is working with the same material that Ben Spies is using. And it's been fascinating because I remember him telling me when they took delivery of their 09 R1s from a shop, had to strip off the lights and the bodywork and everything street-related. And then, he updates me with how they're coming along on the chassis side of things or on their engine development, because they make all their own parts in their workshop in Italy, and he lives 4 kilometers from the workshop, so he's there every day overseeing things. And yeah, so Sergio's having a lot of fun working with the cross-plane Yamaha this year with Tom Sykes. He just got a 7th and a 5th in Qatar, so I'm quite happy for him. Happy for Lele, because he got a top 5 with Shinya Nakano. And yeah, that Aprilia looks like a solid chunk of muscle. When you look at the chassis, the frame, the swing arm, and how beefy the engine looks in there, it's a really pretty bike.
Or the way you look at it going down a straight too, it's got a lot of power.
Yeah, I don't think power is their handicap at all.
Yeah.
From what I know about the direction that the bike is going and how they are dictating their goals as far as making that bike competitive, horsepower is not their problem. I expect that bike to get better as the season goes on, because they've got some really key people, and one thing Aprilia knows how to do is build a race bike. If you look at the evolution of their 250s, they're the only people that have really been fine-tuning it and trying new things in 250s, which has just about a perfect power and weight ratio with their current 250. So I think, when they put their heads to making this 1,000cc four-stroke go, they are drawing upon what they've learned when they tried MotoGP. And they've learned a lot since then. So let's remember that was 5 years ago, which is, more than
a lifetime.
Sorry.
More than 5, let's see.
It was 3.
Six years, probably 7 if you look at the plans for things when they were on the deck. That's like a lifetime as far as four-stroke racing technology has come. We've got the 800s now that are going faster than the leaders back then. So, the Aprilia is going to get stronger. And Ben Spies is going to be the champion through consistency. Because he's not likely to make a lot of what's considered to be rookie mistakes. He's taken everything in stride, and I'm really impressed by how composed he is in his post-race interviews and how he's handling himself. I spent some time with him at Donington last year, and then at every GP event he came to last year, we had some time to just say hi, or I showed him my race truck, I think in Valencia. We joked around and laughed at certain things on the internet, and he seems like a really good guy. If I look at his age, I want to say he's a good kid and he's going to get better, but he's really matured into a man, and he's got a good place outside of Lake Como, and he's got a good team that knows what they're doing. I hope they can secure some outside sponsorship as the season goes on based on his results, because they really could use a massive title sponsor to just come in there and we know money's hard to find in racing right now, but I look for him to be extremely... He's the man to beat. and we called this last year, even before he got on the bike. You know, my select racing friends and coworkers. You know, we just needed to look at what he was capable of on his outings on the GP bike, and we knew he was going to be a really strong force.
Yeah, he's. I mean, the fact that he's doing this on tracks he's never been to is just amazing. He's got three more races. Three races coming up in Europe is going to be, I think, his biggest test. Like, if he can kick ass and nose the way he's been doing, I think he's gone.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably a better career move for him to have gone to World Superbike because there is a little bit more. What's the expression? There's a little bit more of a fudge factor in World Superbike as far as what the rider's able to do and how he's able to maintain and cope and really push the bike. You know, since they've all been running on the Pirellis for the last couple of years, the Pirellis have established their baseline, what those tires are capable of over the 30-minute race distance. So I'm sure all the manufacturers have figured out how to tune their bike and their chassis to work on those Pirellis. And, you know, the rider still plays such a huge part in the equation, because we're seeing so many different brands of bikes that are capable of winning in World Superbike. You know, they're all fairly even down the straight, and they all corner at relatively the same speed, so it really comes up to the rider to make a difference. He's more of the performance edge right now than what you'll see in a typical GP race, where it's become so fine-tuned with the electronics and the focus of the machines, and the tires are, you know, yet another step above the World Superbike spec tire. So you add up all the technical factors as to how you go fast in GP. You know, it's the bike, the team, the tires, and the rider. With all those technical factors, I think the rider makes less of an impact than in World Superbike right now. That could change.
Well, we'll see this year. It's going to be interesting to see the single tire rule play out actually on the track, you know.
Yeah. It's a little sad for me to see one tire in GP. It was something that I was hoping wouldn't happen. Not necessarily from any kind of purist prototype racing elitist attitude, but just, you know, if I even have to look at personal experience, you know, I look back to the Ducati and them saying, all right, we can't beat Valentino on the same stuff, so we got to try something different. You know, and so they switched off of Michelin and helped develop Bridgestone to where they are today. And then you look at what happened when Valentino got Bridgestone and how much focus on development was placed on him once he was able to provide feedback on their tires through the course of last year. You know, and there were rumors of Ducati saying, all right, that's it, we got to go back to Michelin, you know. So, I mean, these are rumors that fly around, but when you look a little deeper than that, you see that, well, there could be a grain of truth to that. And, you know, what do you need to beat Valentino Rossi? You know, we saw in 07 that Stoner had the total package. You know, he had a willing rider that was able to ride that machine and override that machine, and he had the tires and just the complete package, technical package, and the ability to hold it together. So Stoner got it in 07, and Nicky held it together through consistency and some solid results. And you know, for whatever reason, call it bad luck, call the doctor getting injured, or, you know, Michelin letting down, or engine failure, whatever. You know, those are all things that are bound to happen in racing. I find it incredible that he's never missed a race start since the 125s. You know, that's just incredible to fight at that level.
Yeah, we were just talking about, Bob and I were talking on Wednesday about how few injuries actually Rossi has had, which is another amazing thing, considering, you know, the way he rides. He really pushes that thing to the edge of the envelope and somehow survives.
Yeah, well, I think it's because maybe mentally the edge of the envelope for him is a bit further out there.
Yeah.
You know, so where, whereas for another rider, and we'll just use Randy Depriniere as an example, his 37 crashes last year.
Is it really 37?
I think so.
Oh, my God.
It may have been more. I stopped counting by Valencia. But because you know I didn't record the Valencia test crashes that I was when I was working the Valencia test. Yeah, maybe what's 100% for the machine and the tires and him, you know, is a lot less than what it is for Valentino. So Valentino could be at the edge of the performance envelope, but he personally is only running at 90%.
Right.
You know, if he had tires that would go that much harder and that much better through the corner, maybe he could take it even further. But he seems to know, like, oh, okay, this is the edge of this material. You know, I think mentally he's just on another level, and it's nice that Ben Spies is getting world exposure and world championship wins, and he's not having to go up against the doctor just yet, because Ben is only going to get stronger for the next few years in World Superbike, and then maybe he'll be ready, you know, because I think it takes somebody really special to be able to go up against the doctor for a variety of reasons.
Well, so do you think they'll actually get a chance to race against each other?
It's quite possible. You know, I don't want to say no, because obviously if you're an up-and-coming racer or you consider yourself to be a good professional racer, I don't care how old you are, I'm sure you want to get a crack at the doctor while he's still riding. You know, and he's young enough that he could definitely stay involved in GP for the next couple of years. And depending on how the bikes go, you know, if Espeleta decides to rein in the technology a little bit, it's possible one could jump up that way, or maybe Valentino will step down to Superbike. You never know, because already we're seeing massive changes in the last couple of years as far as the racing platform. We saw the big move to 800. Now we're seeing a big move to spec tires. And maybe next year or 2 years from now we're going to see a reduction in electronics. So there's big changes that are going on. And I think a big change that nobody's really been talking about is what's really going to happen to the 250s and the 600s coming in. Know, all the things that I've seen on the internet, and just talking with people in the paddock, I think that's going to be a lot bigger of a change than people are realizing.
I'm actually getting pretty excited about the whole Moto2 thing.
Yeah.
It could be fun.
I think it's going to be surprising for a lot of people. Like 2 weeks ago, I discovered this beforehand. That's all I'm going to say about that.
It'll be interesting to see what kind of riders we're going to have left in the Moto2 class at that point, because it was 2010, so I can see maybe Bautista sticking around, you know. We're going to have some of the guys that just moved up from 125s going to be around.
Well, I think a couple of guys that are in GP for 2009 probably won't be there for 2010. You know, there's a natural cyclical procession that happens.
Right.
If you're out there and you're either not bringing your A game every single week, or you're just getting too old, there's a time to step down and maybe, you know, I'd love to see Loris in World Superbike. I think he's got so much body English and such a good
attitude. Maybe on an Aprilia. I mean, it's a small bike. It would fit him well, I think.
That would be a major coup for them if they could get someone with Loris's ability. I still believe he's got race wins in him at the GP level. It's just getting the bike working right with the tires.
Yeah, the Suzuki actually is doing pretty well so far. But they always do well in preseason, and then something happens.
Carlos Checa. He's always done great in preseason. Preseason and the last five races of the season.
Right.
You know, so there's no
contract time.
There's no such thing as an always in. In motorcycle racing, you know, all it takes is one broken wrist. You never know, you know. And even if you look at a factory like Ducati that's fielding so many bikes, they're such a small organization in the grand scheme of things that, you know, if a couple of people got sick for a few weeks or had a personal, you know, bike accident or whatever, that could really hamper them and slow down development of key things. You know, because they're such a small group, so. You can never really say always. It would be fun to see, I think, mostly how Nicky's dedication works out over this year, because it is a challenge to ride that bike, and everybody that's come into contact with it, you know, experienced guys like Barros that have also, you know, been on the HRC Repsol team, and he's ridden Yamahas, he's ridden so many different types of bikes for so many years. Even he had an interesting time coming to grips with it. You know, and then you've got occasional wildcat Tony Elias. He had trouble consistently with that bike, And it's one thing to say, well, is it the bike or is it the rider? And naturally, it's both. But we know Nicky's got a lot of determination, and he puts in a lot of laps. Yeah. So we'll see what happens, especially now that they've reduced the practice time, which I think is for cost cutting, with quotation marks. Kind of sad to see that happen too, because if you want to see the world's best go at it on Sunday, they should have enough time to get everything set up. You want to have them on the best bike that they can have on Sunday.
So. And now we get a 50-50 chance on the weather, too.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it plays into the hands of people like Valentino that are really good at analyzing their setup and making changes for race day. And he's usually pretty good at getting it set up fairly fast. Not as fast as Stoner is. Stoner seems to be able to put in 5 laps, make a couple changes, do 5 laps, make a couple changes, and then that's pretty much it. He's ready for the race. So, maybe it'll benefit him in that regard. I don't know. We'll see.
The new kids are going to have a tough time, like Kallio and Canepa.
One thing I've noticed is how riders tend to go in circles on race weekend. You'll start off with a setting on Friday morning, and you'll make changes Friday morning, Friday afternoon, make more changes Saturday afternoon, Saturday morning. And by the time warm-up comes around, you're right back to the same setting you were on Friday morning. I've seen that before. And I know of it happening in other garages, so it's just one of those things where maybe it'll kind of curtail that a little bit. And it does, it probably will help different riders get up into the top 10, because, maybe one guy will have nailed the setup better than a couple of the others that might be struggling, either due to a weather condition or just dumb luck. Half the time, if you got to go in a certain direction, you hope that you're going in the right one. That'll probably be a neat thing to consider. Maybe not necessarily the best riders are up in the front, but it's good for the series to have more of a mix. And it was nice also to see that Monster was retained by Dorna to stay in the series. Be fun for Tech 3.
The Chinbar and Tech 3.
Yeah, Tech 3. I mean, that's a big deal for Monster, because basically they've... I think that's probably how big their logo would have been on the Kawasaki's.
Right.
The Yamaha looks really sharp. It's got the nice yellow and black, and add a little white, and you can kind of see the old Bumblebee, the Bardabee. So I think it's nice. And Tech 3 could definitely use the money, because that team's always been scratching, and those guys have always worked harder, I think, than most teams, because of how much extra they'd have to do besides their racing job, whether it was building their hospitality and then taking it down after the European races, and then also staying in the race trucks when they were at European races, sleeping there. Those guys really, really put out a lot of effort. So good for Tech 3 to get that sponsorship, and I hope they can get more sponsorship.
Yeah, hopefully they can work out their little personal issues too.
I don't give a shit about any of the personal issues. There's politics on every single team. There's people that don't get along on every single team. In the famous quote from Faster, their teammate's the first one you want to beat. Well, part of the deal is on a GP team is the next guy's the guy you want to beat. If you're a mechanic on this rider's bike, you want to make sure you do a better job than that mechanic on your teammate's bike. It does attract the most competitive people, and there are a lot of large egos in GP racing. You have to have it in order to be there. And if this can finally give Colin the reason to perform, then that's great for him. Because every year it's either playing second fiddle to this or not on the best equipment, or the tires let me down, or now he's on the same bike as Toslin.
And he's got a reason to beat him too.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. At the end of the day, the rider is the guy sitting there on the starting line with the twist grip, and he's got to survive the whole race and bring it home. So, I think all kind of team orders and dissatisfaction goes out the window once the visor goes down and you take off. Then it's just every man for himself out there. If there are no team orders.
And well, that's why we like the. We like actual racing.
Yeah. Yeah, I like racing. I've enjoyed watching the Superbike and the Super Sport races and some of the GP testing.
Are you going to any races this year, other than the obvious ones, Laguna?
Yeah, I'll probably be at a few races this year. You know, it'll be a nice chance to see a World Superbike. I haven't seen a World Superbike event since...
2004, maybe?
2006.
Laguna? Oh, okay.
At Valencia. And, Yeah, Superbikes would be good. I find it really strange. I'm baffled as to how AMA Pro Racing didn't manage to get on the same card as the World Superbike event. I think that's a big shame because, we obviously want to show how good our national riders are, and it's a beautiful circuit, a beautiful venue, and it was just really a shame that Miller Motorsports and AMA Pro Racing couldn't come to an agreement that would allow the two series to run on the same weekend. On the plus side, we'll get to see World Supersport, and it'd be really neat to compare the 600 times from World Supersport to other bikes.
Hmm.
Yeah. It depends on the course, you know, exactly which course they're going to use. But, yeah, it'll be nice.
Are you going to attend anything outside the country?
Probably.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm not in a big rush to really go anywhere right now.
I can imagine.
No, it's like I got to go get the car and do some work on one of our cars, and then I got to pick up my girl, and I want to play with the dog, and... Yeah, I got to answer a bunch of emails. That's about it.
All right, Liam, thanks a lot for taking time to talk to us, and we'll catch up soon.
Yeah, definitely. If anybody has a cargo van or a Chevy Astro, the Chevy Astro van, that's a cargo van, let me know. Looking for a cargo
in the Bay Area.
Yeah, looking for a cargo van.
To buy?
I need a cargo van, yeah.
Yeah,
it would suit my purposes.
Extend your garage a bit?
Yeah, among other things. You never know. Could have a mobile office on wheels. I've been seeing a lot of spy shows on TV lately. You know, it always seems like there's a van out there with some kind of recording equipment.
Nice. All right, man.
All right.
Good talking to you, chap.
Thanks, Jules.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Liam. It was really good to talk to Liam, hang out, have some chow. Smoke a couple of smokes, just chill out. He's so incredibly relaxed. It's great to see him back in San Francisco and chilling. That's all I have. We did obviously have a World Superbike weekend, but I'm not going to talk about it. Some of you will not even get to see the second race until later this week, hopefully. Who knows with speed, and we'll save the actual discussion of the race for the show with Bob later this week. So once again, sorry about the delay of this show, and we'll talk to you in episode 172. Ciao.